In this election year, political bestsellers have come from both the left and the right. Kitty Kelly's book on the Bush family has been contending with a book by the Swift boat veterans for the top spot on the bestseller lists. Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 is one of many political documentaries and feature films in the theaters. This all makes up a kind of perfect storm of politically motivated popular culture, and it's been building for years, as NPR's Lynn Neary reports.
1968. The Vietnam War was raging. President Lyndon Johnson decided not to seek re-election. At the Democratic Convention, police and protesters waged a bloody battle in the streets of Chicago. And the book that topped the nonfiction bestseller list that year? The Better Homes and Gardens New Cookbook. Political books like Miami and the Siege of Chicago came out in 1968, but not one made it to the annual top 10 list published by Bowker's, which tracks book sales. As for movies, well, there was only one movie about Vietnam that year.
Is that what you do, sponsor an inquisition over here?
Now what you're going to tell the people?
I'm going to tell the people the facts of what I saw in there.
What you saw in there was nothing.
I don't call brutality nothing, Colonel.
That man was lining us up for a VC mortar crew.
There's still such a thing as due process.
Out here, due process is a bullet.
The one person who had the guts to make a movie in Hollywood about the Vietnam War was John Wayne.
Columbia University journalism professor Todd Gitlin.
He made a film with his own financing because the studios wouldn't take the risk. They thought the war was too divisive. P.S., the Green Berets, which was virtually universally condemned, died a pathetic death at the box office.
Where only John Wayne dared to tread several decades ago is a well-worn path this year. Gitlin says entertainers, writers, and filmmakers from both the right and left have been energized by the current political climate.
Both feel that we're poised on the edge of something electric and devastating, apocalyptic. And therefore, I think all kinds of people are flooding into politics with whatever they've got.
But the political atmosphere alone doesn't explain the explosion of books and films this year, or even the large audience for such fare. After all, 1968 was also a year that seemed cataclysmic to many. But back then, says conservative Richard Viguerie, news and information was controlled by a small handful of gatekeepers. Viguerie is the author of America's Right Turn, How Conservatives Used New and Alternative Media to Take Power. He points to the abolition of the Fairness Doctrine during the Reagan administration as a key event to explain the way media have changed. Broadcasters were no longer required to provide equal time for opposing points of view, and that paved the way for highly opinionated media venues like talk radio and cable news channels like Fox.
You say, and you say as you sit here today, that there was no enemy fire from either bank.
There was no enemy fire from either bank. But let me say something. John Kerry's
the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth are a case in point, says Viguerie, because it was the alternative media which first reported their allegations against John Kerry.
Starting with Matt Drudge, and then the bloggers picked it up, talk radio picked it up, and a week later, cable television picked it up, and it was for 3-4 weeks that this was a big story in the new and alternative media, but the old establishment media just completely ignored the story until there came a point in time when they could no longer credibly ignore this story.
But if the mainstream media were ignoring the Swift Boat veterans, the conservative publishing company Regnery Press was not. Within a month of their first news conference, Regnery had signed a contract for the veterans' story. The result? Unfit for Command, Swift Boat Veterans Speak Out Against John Kerry, a book that has dominated the nonfiction bestseller lists for weeks.
We were all surprised at how quickly it started to run and how big it has become.
Margie Ross is president and publisher of Regnery Press. Known for serious books about conservative issues, Ross says in the mid-90s, Regnery decided it wanted to reach more readers. So Regnery began publishing books by conservative personalities like Ann Coulter and G. Gordon Liddy. Ross says they looked for authors who could talk about their books in a passionate and entertaining way on radio and TV.
From the moment we start thinking about a book, the moment we meet a new author or see a new proposal, we're asking questions about how we're going to market the book, how we're going to publicize the book, and whether the book is covering a topic that we think will spark a public debate.
Regnery's strategy paid off. In the last 2 years, it's had at least 15 books on the New York Times bestsellers list. Not to be outdone, the left has generated its own share of bestsellers, resulting in a feeding frenzy for a public with an enormous appetite for political books. And David Rosenthal, executive vice president at Simon & Schuster, says the book-buying public is just as divided as the electorate.
We've seen tremendous polarization in buying. You see books that are very, very pro-administration selling extremely well, and you see books which are very violently anti-Bush selling very well. The middle has not worked entirely well.
This year, the public's heightened interest in politics spilled over into movie theaters. A spate of feature films and documentaries took aim at the Bush administration, most notably Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11.
Trying to get members of Congress to get their kids to enlist in the Army and go over to Iraq. Congressman?
While talk radio helped jumpstart the conservative media revolution, documentaries have been dominated by the left. Documentary filmmaker Pamela Yates says documentaries have always been a venue for progressive politics.
Political documentary filmmaking is part of the progressive movement's attempt to move society forward, to question our democracy. And it's really a move aimed at reforming things that we think are out of line.
All of this, says Tim Rutten, a media columnist for the Los Angeles Times, is similar to 19th century America, when the country was awash with pamphlets on everything from abolition to vegetarianism. But Rutten says the pamphleteers used the art of persuasion to win converts. He says today's writers and filmmakers are more engaged in propaganda than persuasion.
These are not people speaking, you know, across a gap to others, hoping to invite them over. These are people who are trying to rally their base.
The result, says Rutten, is a public that may be more energized, but not necessarily better informed.
They're producing opinions about opinions and starving their readers, viewers, listeners for facts, and that this surfeit of opinion, rather than sort of liberating people, is in fact constraining them.
And what no one will know until Election Day is whether all the big numbers on the bestseller lists and at the box office will also be reflected in the number of people who head into the voting booths. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.